This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTVN's NBA Team Podcast as we are reaching the month of March this week. A lot of madness ensuing, usually on the college basketball end, but it doesn't mean that things aren't getting a little bit mad and nutty and frantic in the NBA regular season as things are starting to kind of sort of wind down as we get, now that we're past the All-Star break, the trade deadline is passed. We even have a lot of waivers that have been going on that we wanted to touch up on. So there's a lot going on, but I wanted to introduce first my co-host, Adam Murray.
Greetings.
Okay, your voice is not in the Brian Pillman area. It's somewhere in like the kind of slightly Mr. Magoo area.
I'm just sound like an old man now, because back in my day when things were better, March Madness was something we looked forward to, not a bunch of mediocre teams that are all...
Well, back in your day, March Madness was like 16 teams.
Well, back in the day, we had Harvard was the greatest, and it was all the Ivy League schools, and all the championships.
Bill Bradley was at Princeton, and Rick Mount was at Purdue. Yeah, you talk about the old days.
Nowadays, all these one-and-done kids, and the season's horrible with seven lost teams being in the top three, and it's just like, why bother?
But we're going to be catching up in the NBA, as we always do on these shows, and you know, a couple other things we wanted to touch up on that might not be necessarily NBA-related, but let's first get this out of the way. Steph Curry, you and I have always kind of had like a handshake agreement where, even though we didn't actually shake hands, we talked about, we don't want to overdo it with the Warriors. We don't want to overdo it with how terrible the Philadelphia 76ers are. We wanted to try to kind of keep a certain balance there, keep it at immediate level. But I'm going to tell you now, we're going to have to really go overboard here with Steph Curry, because he's doing things that we haven't really seen in the NBA ever.
Well, he's just basically, he's become an NBA Jam character, and... Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
I mean, are you signing because you're not impressed, or are you just signing because it's to a point where you're almost used to his greatness? Are we at that point?
It's signing because it's just like, how much crazier something can you do? Okay, turn around, fade away, shot falling into the crowd, up, done. Half court shot like it's nothing, done. This, you know, pick and pop with second to go to win the game, done. It's almost like you're shocked when he misses one now. It's like, well, what went wrong? Yeah. What you were probably too close. You need to be back by the letters.
Yeah, it was a crazy week for Curry in general. He had a really great game against the Miami Heat because they were finishing a road trip, you know, that you know, it's actually started before the All-Star break, I believe. And then after the Miami Heat game, they went to Orlando to play the Magic. You know what's weird, though? It was on Thursday night, but it was not one of the TNT games. So it's hilarious that they go to halftime, or they go into the in-between between the two games on the two-game doubleheader for TNT, and all they could talk about was a game that wasn't even on, and that was Steph Curry scoring 51 points on the Orlando Magic, making ridiculous shots. He made 10 three-pointers, I believe, in that game. And then he tied the NBA record for three-pointers in a single game on Saturday on that ABC primetime slate where the Golden State Warriors went to Oklahoma City to play the Thunder. Incredible game, probably the best game of the regular season. The Thunder were on fire. The Warriors had to kind of rally back. They needed a couple of breaks at the end. And then Andre Iguodala made some free throws at the end of regulation that were enormous because he got a bailout on a foul by Kevin Durant. Then Curry makes a couple more threes in the overtime, including one that, I mean, describe it. Describe what happened at the end of that game.
He just basically hit a normal three from, what, 30, 35 feet?
But he got the, like, he got the little free, he got the little outlet, you know, from off the rebound on a Russell Westbrook shot that sort of like hit the glass and then it kind of careened, and then he got an outlet where he was riding the baseline or the sideline, and then right after he crosses half court, you start thinking There's about 3 seconds left, so he's got enough time to, like, maybe make a crossover and then take a three with no time left. But instead, he pulls up from 32 feet away with 2 seconds left or maybe just less, and with no guy on him, or maybe, you know, Andre Robinson backing out a little bit too far, and then Curry just launches his three that goes in. I think it hit the glass, but I couldn't – the shot was so good that I couldn't even really tell how quickly – how where it went, but at the end of the day, it went through the hoop, and the Warriors beat the Thunder 121-118 in an incredible game.
Yeah, well, you know, what do you expect when, you know, Steph Curry goes 12-16 from three, and then Durant goes 7-11? It's just, you know, those two are on fire. Nobody else really, you know, everyone was just sort of sitting watching that, but
yeah,
that's the games we look forward to. You have two superstars going against each other.
Well, Westbrook wasn't too bad either. He wasn't completely on his game like Durant was shooting-wise. Durant had, what, 36 points, 38 points?
Durant had 37. Westbrook will always do what he does, but he
had
wasn't.
Durant had made a three that it looked like it was going to finish the game off. You know, they'd put him up 4 points, and then the Warriors got a quick layup, and then they trapped Durant, I think it was, that they got, and then Durant kind of heaved the ball up, and it got stolen in midcourt, and that's where Iguodala drew the foul and then tied the game with the free throws. So very, very wild ending between two. I mean, obviously, Golden State might be the greatest team ever, and then Oklahoma City ain't no slouch either. A lot of criticism about the way Billy Donovan sort of coached that last the fourth quarter and then the extra period. But, you know, Billy Donovan's going to get a lot of criticism no matter what, because
he's a rookie coach. He's never seen anything like that before.
That's true.
So, you know, it's how many games have Oklahoma City had like that? This is just, okay, now we know what we need to do for round two of the playoffs, because there you go. There's the 1-4.
Yeah.
So
I still have a few doubts about the Warriors getting to 10, only having 10 losses or less. They still got to play the Spurs.
I don't even want to hear that. You know, this is one of the reasons why we try not to talk about the Warriors so much. ESPN crawl, well, the Bulls were this record on this. It's like, no, there's 30 games left. Let's just enjoy them, as opposed to just, that's like somebody saying he has a no-hitter through the third inning. No, who cares?
Which performance did you like to watch? Because one of them was a game that was slightly close between the Pelicans and the Pistons, but it was kind of an innocuous game, and a lot of people would just rather forget it outside of the one standout performance that we're about to talk about. But do you prefer the Curry's 46 points in that game, or the 59-point, 20-rebound, unbelievable, wow type of fantasy line that Anthony Davis had against the Pistons?
Wow, so we're segueing into Davis now.
Yes, we are.
So I guess I should say
when a guy goes for more 50 plus points and 20 rebounds or more, which is only the third time in the last 16 years, we have to talk about it.
Well, of course. So go ahead, floor is yours.
I mean, it's an incredible performance. Of course, you know, the Pistons went through the transition of bringing in Tobias Harris. You know, defensively they were starting to kind of drop off anyway. And you notice that the Donis Montiunas trade didn't go through, so they had to send him back to Houston. How do you feel if you get traded and then they tell you, oh, well, you're stuck here?
Well, it's part of the business. This is, you know, you could either take it like a professional and be like, okay, I know this is my contract, or you could just be the, you know, the spoiled brat, be like, ah, wah. But I think, you know, Montiunas so far has taken it well. He's like, look, I'm here. They're going to try to, you know, to see what my value is, and he's also a restricted free agent, so...
But Detroit plays on, and then they played on against the Pelicans that day, and the Pelicans won the game. A couple of other players had standout games. Obviously, Andre Drummond, I believe he had like 14 rebounds in that game. Drew Holiday had one of his rare appearances for the New Orleans Pelicans. But no, 59 points and 20 rebounds on, I believe it was 24 shots, or maybe less for Anthony Davis. Just absolutely unbelievable day.
Well, not to burst the bubble, but like you said, Tobias just came in, and he doesn't know any of the systems. He's just getting tossed out there, so, mm-hmm. You know, you just watch the highlights, because, you know, we don't. Nobody else shows New Orleans games except for you.
Yeah.
And you know, you can see a lot of defensive lapses, a lot of, you know, places where nobody should have been, and it was like a lot of easy shots.
Leaving Davis open for threes was the first mistake. When he makes the first couple, it's like, okay, you really need to, even though you don't want to put Drummond out there, you know, outside because you want to keep him in the paint to get the rebounds, and I understand that, you got to put a body on him. So, you know, Marcus Morris, whether it have to be, you know, and we talked about this in previous episode, how they don't, Detroit, even with the moves that they made, don't have a lot of size. And that came to kill them in that game against the Pelicans. But, you know, we've only seen this a few times. Chris Webber did it in 2001, I believe it was, when he was with the Kings against the Indiana Pacers. It was around like 51 points and 26 rebounds. And then Shaq had the one in his MVP year in 2000 on his birthday where he destroyed an awful Clippers front court and scored 61 points and 23 rebounds. Do you remember either of those games?
I remember the Weber game. I don't remember the Shaq game.
You know, the Kings lost that game, though.
Did they?
They did. They did. Yeah. They did. And I think Weber had the most shot at, like, I remember they had open court, and the trivia question they had is, for your highest scoring game, which player had the most shot attempts? And they had all these great players like Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. And the guy who had the most was actually Weber. Weber had, I believe, had what, 60 attempts? Or maybe 50?
Yeah, it is. He was just chucking everything up that day.
I mean, that was his MVP year in Sacramento, where he didn't win the MVP, but it was like that was his best years individually. And then Shaq was just killing. Shaq, that was the year that Shaq was like in shape. He wanted to win a title so badly. It was his first year playing under Phil Jackson. And the urban legend that Jay Adande said recently was that it was Shaq's birthday, and the Clippers wouldn't comp him tickets because it was a Clipper home game. And he was mad, so he took it out on him.
That I don't really believe that, but mm-hmm. whatever the legend is, it was just one day. You know, everybody has.
Well, remember the one with LeBron with the mask, where he wanted to wear the black one, and the NBA said no. So when he wore the clear one, he said he was going to take it out on the next team he played. It was the Charlotte Hornets at the time, or the Charlotte Bobcats at the time, who had just given up 60 plus to Carmelo Anthony, I think it was. And so he took it out on them and scored 61.
You know, but it's like, oh, I'm going to take it out on them. Everybody says that every game, and it's just bad defense. And, you know, either A, you're going to hit all your shots, and which, you know, as we saw, Weber did. But, you know, it's just, I'd say, more bad D on the other team's part as opposed to you going off if you have to take, you know, the Kobe line. Oh, well, he scored 40 points on 40 shots. Well, okay, that.
Yeah, but what really stands out, though, with Curry and Davis is the efficiency. They did not take a lot of shots. I don't think either of them took more than 30 shots. So
no, but
it just absolutely amazing performances all around.
Well, this is the season of offensivity? I don't know.
Offensive explosion.
Yeah, so why
it's
not
definitely
have...
exploded, yeah.
Why not have performances like this where you get crazy stat lines?
Especially the three ball. If you're really feeling it from the three-point line and nobody has a really good – with the high pick and rolls and how everybody creates plays where they could just try to get you open, loose for a three with a back screen or whatever, or a curl or whatever it is that they're going to try to do. If you can make your threes, then you might – I mean, look, Terrence Ross had a 50-point game doing this a couple of years ago. So, you know, if you make them, then anybody could probably get to a point where they get up to 30 or 40 points. But when you get into the 40, it's like the 45 to 50 range, then you're touching greatness.
Yeah, 50 is the new, I don't want to say it's a new 100, but it's like the new 80.
Yeah, I don't know. You think anybody could get to past, well, 60 is reasonable. We saw LeBron do it. We saw Carmelo Anthony do it. I even think Darren Williams did it a few years ago. But it doesn't happen that often. It hasn't happened yet this season. When's our next 60-point game, you would say?
Well, we're just waiting for Curry to play again because the way he's going next week, I don't know.
Let's transition this from a team that seems to be on cloud nine there with the Golden State Warriors to a couple of teams, two different conferences that are sort of hitting a snag. Not, you know, I don't know what the lowest cloud is. Is that cloud one? Or is that
cloud one?
Or is that like no cloud at all?
I'd say there's just no cloud.
No cloud. Or maybe dark clouds hovering over them. And let's first talk about the Memphis Grizzlies. Marc Gasol, unfortunately, suffered a broken foot on what it looked like a very fluky play where he kind of like, he stepped in, he lost the ball, and then you could immediately tell he was waving in the medical staff. He knew something was wrong, and it was a broken foot. Marc Gasol is out for the season. Let's talk about them first, because we have another team too, but let's hit these guys first. Now, Memphis is still 10 games over 500. They made the deal for Lance Stephenson. Vince Carter is starting to play a little bit more in Marc Gasol's absence. They're playing a little smaller. What do you see here with Memphis? Now, a lot of people have sort of made the talking point that this might be the farewell for grit and grind because Zach Randolph might not come back, Tony Allen might not come back, and now without Gasol, we might not see any of these people together again. So what say you to that?
I don't think it's as terrible as, you know, everyone else is saying because you have two legit centers in Randolph and Gasol, so you lose one. Okay, you could just play a little smaller, and now you have a little more spacing. If you get a three-point shooter, which they have, they got your boy PJ Harrison.
Well, they had one in Courtney Lee, and they traded him.
Yeah, but Harris is just, you know, he's willing to chuck it up. So if you start embracing, like, maybe we should change our style a little bit, go with a little finesse or a little, like I've seen their threes have gone up a little bit. Mm-hmm. PJ's been playing well. Stevenson, not so much. He looks completely lost again, unfortunately. But
I love Lance. I can't lie.
I don't think it's, you know, obviously they're not going to go far in the playoffs with those top teams up there. But
do you see a scenario here now? The teams behind them are about a game over. The Blazers are three games over 500. And we'll talk about them too a little bit later because I got to say something about the Blazers backcourt. But do you see a scenario there where the Grizzlies start to sort of tumble in that competitive West and then they get to, they sort of close in on that difference between the winning record of Memphis and the winning records for Portland and then, you know, the Rockets at 500 and the Jazz at under 500. Do you see a situation where the Grizzlies might just fall apart?
What competitive West? With Houston and when the Kings battling and the Jazz battling for the
I wouldn't even count the Kings. What I'm talking about is that when they – if Memphis – I don't know how many of those top teams, the teams above them, which, you know, San Antonio, the Clippers, the Thunder, the Warriors, I don't know how many games they have left to play. I think they've played the Warriors all but one more time, you know, so it's really going to be up to how many times they play the Spurs and whether they can get those wins against those teams like Portland and Houston, which might be deal breakers for them if things start to really, you know, go awry and they start to tumble and lose some games.
You know, they got a five-game lead over the A spot, but, you know, realistically, are they better than Dallas, Portland, Houston, and Utah? Yeah. So, yeah, are they going to tumble far? I don't see them really doing that much. They don't really need to go, you know, you don't need to tumble, because obviously the way the schedule is going to go, they still, all these teams still have to play the Lakers probably twice more, Phoenix, mm-hmm. Denver, and Minnesota, so there's easy wins for all these teams, so I don't see them really tumbling that far.
For the other team we got to talk about, and that's in the Southeast Division, the Eastern Conference, that's the Miami Heat. Now, Miami here is at 32-26, which, you know, is decent. They're a half game ahead of their another divisional team, the Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta's at 5 over 500. That's just such a far cry from last year, but we're not talking about them right now. Miami is likely to lose Chris Bosh for the season. He has the blood clot. It's in his like calf muscle, I believe, this time instead of the lungs.
I don't know, but the same thing as last year. And the doctor said stay home. He's like, no, I kind of want to play, and they're like, no.
And there's a little bit of going back and forth, you know, a little bit indecision about whether or not Bosh will come back if he wants to, or whether or not the doctors are going to clear him, or even if Pat Riley allows him to play. So a lot is up in the air. Miami, you know, they lost to the Warriors because everybody loses to the Warriors, but they played decently. They made a deal because Joe Johnson got waived by the Brooklyn Nets, because we talked about this in the previous episode. We knew that teams, that players that were in the final years of their contracts, regardless of the cost of that final year, a lot of them were going to just get bought out for the sake of the player wanting to play for a playoff team or something else. And so one of the biggest dominoes to fall in the waiver wire was Joe Johnson going to the Miami Heat. Is this sort of an emergency type of signing? Is this, if Bosch hadn't had his recurrence of problems, would Joe Johnson have been signed?
Well, probably not. Well, they could have.
I mean, he's a forward. He's not a big man. But,
well,
you know.
that's my point I was going to get into. But point number one, they're only five games above 10th place Washington. So they have a lot to fall down, more so than Memphis would. But
so you're saying the East is more competitive in their crop than the West is?
There's two games separating 5th place Atlanta and 9th place Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Two games.
And then there's the Washington Wizards at three games under. I would say Orlando's out.
Orlando's pretty much out.
Yeah, yeah.
But so they, you know, that's a lot of real estate there. But I don't get this signing when you have Lou Alding, Gerald Green, and Justice Winslow, and you're going to add another small forward to your team.
But he's more the slower cerebral type of scorers, which is kind of something that they needed.
Yeah, but okay, you got your backcourt of Dragic and Wade. Those two aren't going, so you're going to have, what, Amari Stoudemire with you know,
Hassan Whiteside.
He's down. He's not really starting. He's getting his minutes, but he's, you know.
They're relying on him more than I've ever seen him rely on him in the
Okay, so you got Hassan Whiteside and Amare, and then you're going to have Johnson play the four?
And Birdman's gone.
Yeah, Birdman's gone. There's no other, you know, Udonis Haslam's out with an injury. So teams just, you know, they're just going to all go big against him and just start just taking him.
It's funny because that's what they did, you know, when LeBron was there. They played small. You know, their starting center was Chris Bosh, and then their power forward – a lot of times it was LeBron. LeBron would sort of be the point forward at the four position, depending on the matchups. And now, obviously, there's no LeBron anymore in Miami, but now you got Lou Alding there, who's started to play a little bit better. Justice Winslow's a decent six-man for the time being. He'll wind up being a starter in the future. Joe Johnson's now in the mix. We'll see how he's implemented. You know, Eric Spoelstra, he's got a way of finding good niches for every player, regardless of their star, of their of how big they are. You know, for LeBron, he found a decent fit there. Dwayne Wade, he's found a new fit there with Chris Bosh without LeBron in the mix. So it's going to be – I feel like Spoelstra is going to find something for Joe Johnson, but is it going to fit for what Miami's got to do?
Another thing, I don't really see that Dragic has really fit too well in there in Miami. What do you think?
Well – they did the sign. It was kind of one of those signings where when they did the trade, they already made up their mind that they were going to sign him anyway, regardless of what the market demanded. And so, you know, maybe that was a Pat Riley move because he just wanted a younger guard beside Wade in order to help him out in case Wade starts to slip a little bit or he needed some rest. But yeah, he doesn't always fit the way that Spoelstra plays. He's sort of used to kind of that faster style of play, and that is not Miami. Miami's one of the slowest teams in the league. So that's a big problem right there. Do you have an issue watching them play when Dragic is sort of off?
I don't have an issue with them. It's just I think they could have, you know, since they're hard pressed against the cap and trying to, you know, save money, they could have made a lot better signings than him, I think.
Yeah, 12.9 points, 3.6 rebounds, and 5.4 assists. The years where he was really doing well in Houston and Phoenix, I think his assist level was a little higher than that, somewhere around, like 6 or 7?
Yeah.
You know, he was a little bit more involved. You know, the problem was in Phoenix, among a lot of things, is that Dragic was the only guy that was sharing the ball. So when he got traded, they had literally nobody to pass the ball to anyone else. You would think that Dragic would be able to take that efficiency as an assist man and bring it over to Miami. But, you know, I mean, Miami's still one of the better teams in assists. They do share the ball a lot. Even Whiteside, you know, tries to share the ball when, you know, he's had triple doubles due to blocks, but he does get his assists every now and then. And Dwayne Wade is still a highly efficient player. That's the one amazing part of about the last 2 years of Miami is that Dwayne Wade still has a lot left in the tank.
Well, he's become more reserved. He's not that, you know, I'm going to just run into you and get the foul. He's becoming more well-rounded now and is, you know, sort of the way Vince Carter changed his game up. Like, I'm not going to drive as much. I'm not going to try to dunk. I'm just going to become a sort of a spot-up shooter, pick my points, conserve my energy, stay healthy.
And, well, who you think will be able to get out of their rut a little bit quicker? Will it be Miami in the East or will it be Memphis in the West?
I think it should be Miami. As long as you have Wade there, you're still better off than, like, you know, the Charlottes of the world.
But without Bosch, what's the likelihood that they'll make noise in the Eastern Conference, regardless of where they're seated?
None. This is the same thing that happened last year.
But the last year they didn't make the playoffs. It'll be different this year because they'll actually make the playoffs.
Well, yeah, they'll make the playoffs. Last year, you know, because Bosch went out, that's how they fell out. But this year, they're going to sink a little bit again, and they're not going to make the waves because, you know, Bosch went out after all the trades. If he went out, let's say, 2 weeks ago, maybe these trades might be a little different. Maybe they're not going to get rid of Chris Anderson. Maybe they're going to, you know, go for a big. But,
predict timing. Let's list some of the teams. Like, you know, you had mentioned Atlanta at 32-27. Right behind them is Indiana. They just lost a close one to the Charlotte Hornets. Charlotte's right behind them at 30-27. Behind them at the last spot, the Chicago Bulls. Wow. And then a half game behind the Bulls is the Detroit Pistons. Like, we had just talked about them giving up that big game against Anthony Davis. But they turned that right around with a game against the Cleveland Cavaliers where they won in Cleveland and they gave up, what, like less than 90 points?
Yeah, it's just...
very strange, very weird game with the Pelicans. This is going to be one of those just, I don't know what that is.
Are you playing? Are you tanking? You want to be healthy? You want to be injured? Like, I don't, that team needs to.
Now, the Wizards are at 27-30. They're winning a little bit more now, but they're still at under 500. They got a lot of ground to make up still, in my opinion. And they made one signing, and that was it. And it was directly involved with the waiver wire, and that was that they signed, I believe it was J.J. Hickson.
Yeah, remember when he was a hot name and he was good?
He was a one-and-doneer out of NC State. You know, we talked about him in that episode. He went to Cleveland, and he seemed to have a decent rapport with LeBron, like for a couple of years there. And then when LeBron left, he had like one. He kind of toiled in Cleveland, and then he had some decent years in Denver. And
he was doing well in Denver. All of a sudden, you know, these three foreign guys come in, and then he's DNP CDs and out the door quickly.
That's just one of the moves. There's a variety of others, some that have not been made official. One of which is that Andre Miller, who was cut by the Minnesota Timberwolves, is now going to probably go to the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs had to cut Ray McCallum Jr. in order to make that move. Which move, maybe one I didn't talk about yet, which one do you think might pay off the most dividends, whether it be Joe Johnson, Andre Miller, Hickson, maybe another one that wasn't as widely reported?
Well, I don't get the Ray McCollum one. I guess, you know, does San Antonio just want to get older? They don't think they're old enough yet.
They don't think they're old enough. So they had to balance it out with the average age. Yeah.
Like, I don't see what Andre Miller could provide them, but that's, I have no idea. You know, they got till Tuesday to cut people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're just sort of waiting on Kevin Martin to see where he goes since he's the one shooter left.
Yeah, they said San Antonio was in the running. But we're not absolutely sure about that. It would almost be like a trade where the Minnesota Timberwolves like trade away Kevin Martin and Andre Miller to the Spurs for nothing, pretty much.
For a heavily protected second round pick that won't come in.
Do you expect any other cuts in the future? Maybe an Eric Gordon, fingers crossed?
No, they would have cut him long ago. They're just content, you know, I think New Orleans is delusional where I think they still think they could do something because they haven't pulled up the roster. They kept Ryan Anderson. I think they just, you know, just head in the sand. We're just going to go with the season.
A guy who, if Dallas had the guts to do it, but because of the fact that they're so, you know, bare at that guard spot, they wouldn't do it is Raymond Felton. You know, he's in his last year, but now he's to a point where they can't get rid of Felton. He's playing pretty well for them. He's sort of kind of stuck in that. He's found his spot on that team for this season, so you can't let him go now.
There's no point in cutting somebody if you're a playoff team. Your team's working, you have your chemistry, just ride it out. It's the teams that are like, okay, we're done, we're useless, you know, we're gonna cut you anyways, so go do your thing now.
Yeah. What about Varejao with the Warriors? I saw him for a couple of minutes in one of those games, I believe it was the Orlando game, and he played decently. You know, he's a team player for the most part.
All I need to do is just run up and down and get a rebound or two. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the two names that are left are...
Is Jason Thompson still in the mix?
No, he's from a starter, you know, last year to out of the league this year.
And then there's Michael Beasley, who's determined to come back into the league.
Well, you got Beasley
out of China,
Darrell Wright. And
yeah, there's Darrell Wright,
because he was looking to come back, and then there was some mild interest from some teams. So there's some Chinese people out there coming, Chinese league players coming back.
Maybe some Chinese heritage there that we don't know about. Or maybe they married somebody who was Chinese on the way. Who knows? A trophy wife, if you will. And so is Johnson like the most high profile one, or do you think there's one more big one that that's going to come up?
No, I don't see any surprises left. I mean, everybody's pretty much going to go who they have, because they would have done it immediately. Why are you dragging it out to the end?
Mm-hmm.
They would have been like, okay, we're done with you. Okay, let's start negotiations now. Yeah. And like the Andre Miller one was sort of late, and like this Kevin Martin one's extremely late.
Maybe Roy Hibbert?
No, because they would have done it already. What's the point of cutting him now?
Yeah.
They're just, you know.
I'm just thinking about guys who have expirings that have kind of struggled, on teams that are going nowhere.
But it's struggling, but you do it for veterans who are, you know, look, you've helped us out. We're going to do it as a courtesy to you. Mm-hmm. Be nice to you. Be nice to your agent. Go for a playoff team. Hibbert and, you know, the Lakers are just like, look, we're here. It's a one-year thing. Neither of us are going to continue with this. Let's just play it out. Get done. So there's no reason to do it if there's just for the sake of doing it.
Is there a certain appeal to the waiver wire where you get these guys that are being cut from these teams? Like, have there been situations where there was a pickup where it really, really worked out for a team? Or do you think it's kind of more of one of those kinds of late additions to a roster that's already kind of found its peak?
Well, it's just more insurance than anything. It's okay, we have a veteran guy in case, you know, some youngin is struggling. We can put him in for 5 minutes. You know, he doesn't have much left in the tank, but we can put him in for 5 minutes
like
at a time.
Like an Andre Miller, you know?
Yeah, not Andre Miller, even just, you know, Joe Smith every year was that guy. Mm-hmm. Just look, he could come in. He could give our guys a break if he needs. So he's not going to provide much. He's not going to go score 20 points, but he can, you know, he can spell everybody.
Now, we saw Joe Johnson have a game-winning three for the Nets about 2 weeks ago, right? Right before the All-Star break. So he's still got a little bit of shot-making ability. He's not at that All-Star level like he was in 2014 anymore, for sure. But, you know, he's not there. But then there are guys that, you know, they move along from the team that they've played for years with, whether it be under a big contract when they were still in their prime or whatever the case may be. They go to a new team and it's just a bad fit. Like, do you see any of these being a bad fit?
Joe Johnson, like we mentioned. It just doesn't fit the roster. He might be a good addition, but, you know, talent-wise, he's the best one out there to this point. But you're not – if you don't fit and you're, you know, you have to play small the entire series with, you know, old legs, and it's just
– is the fact that there are so many teams in the running in the East still kind of like the appeal of trying to get that extra piece that might get you over the top, you know, over another team?
Not really, because I think a lot of these teams are just trying to make the playoffs. They know they're not going to go to the championship. There's no, like, in the West, you don't see any of these teams being picked up, you know, outside of San Antonio. Who's really picked up somebody going, oh, man, we need to make our playoff push? It's just like, look, we know it's Golden State and San Antonio in the finals. We can, you know, we'll make the playoffs probably.
And about two weeks or a month ago, we probably would have said the same thing about the East. But look at the Eastern Conference. A huge game between Toronto and Cleveland. Kyle Lowry with 43 points, game-winning shot. LeBron misses a three that would have won it. And now it's only a two-game difference between the Toronto Raptors and Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, we're always waiting for the Raptors to kind of stumble, but it's just not happening this year, Adam.
Oh, give them time. No, the Raptors, you know, they traded in their offense for defense, and obviously they would be benefited most with the waiver wire, finding somebody, you know, for the three or the four, but it's, you know, they're playing as a team as opposed to Cleveland. Cleveland's not really doing much better under Tyronn Lue.
No, they said that they're trying to play faster, and it doesn't show at all. They're playing kind of the same speed that they always did.
They're playing Cleveland speed, but it's just like my buddy's in and my buddy's coach. It's cool. And they don't seem to be better.
The only difference is that LeBron doesn't criticize the coach for mistakes. because it's basically his choice as the head coach.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you criticize the coach that replaced the guy that you already butted heads with, what does that say about you?
That's just, you know, you're already getting this reputation to begin with, and you're not doing yourself any good by, you know, just making it worse with this soon.
Give us our weekly Boston Celtics update. They're right behind Toronto. They're still like 5.5 games off of where Toronto is.
They have a big homestead coming up. They got like, was it something like 8 out of 10 games or something? I forgot. I was not paying attention to them this week, but they just still strangely overachieving with their no-name roster.
Let me see what their schedule looks like here as we go into the month of March. They get Portland, they get the Knicks, that's at home. They go to Cleveland, then they get two more home games against the Grizzlies and the Rockets. And then they go to Indiana. Then they get a home game against the Thunder. Then that's on ESPN. That'll be on March 16th. So a little bit of share of road games, but more home games than road games, like you said.
Yep, which is always a good thing to have a nice little homestand.
Is there still potential there that you see there with Boston? I mean, is it still a surprise when you look at the standings and you're like, wow, they're 10 games over 500?
Well, it's amazing, but then again, who would have expected Isaiah Thomas to be an all-star roster and have, you know, top 12 stats across the board, pretty much?
It's just going to be weird in the playoffs to see the Boston Celtics in a series where they have the home court, where, you know, it's in where they have the advantage going into the series. I mean, I would almost expect them to have to drop a game at home and then struggle their way back through it like they have for the last couple of years. You know, it just can't be that easy for them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's not going to be easy. They might have home court, but again, you know, they're so young, none of them know how to play. And let's say they get a match like Indianapolis.
They're sort of in the same position Toronto was a couple years ago when they played the Nets, and the Nets are, like, super experienced.
Yeah.
You know,
and it just depends upon if you get, like, somebody like Charlotte or Chicago, easy win. Indiana might not be so easy, so it's not, definitely not over.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the teams that are right there at the 8th spot or hovering around the 8th spot in the Western Conference. I wanted to hit on two in particular. I'm just tired of talking about the Rockets because even though they're really talented, James Harden had another 40-point game over on Thursday night on TNT. But I want to talk a little bit about the Portland Trailblazers because Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are absolutely on a tear, averaging together almost like 70 points a game at times. What do you think about the backcourt there?
They're that's all they have because they have no front court.
Yeah, Mason
Bonnelly and Al Farouk Aminu are scoring points for you.
Yeah, Ed Davis, Mason Plumlee.
It's basically those two guys are, you know, they are the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, you are very high on them. I'm also very low on the West.
I'm just shocked at how it works because McCollum and Lillard are very, very similar, but they just find a way to not get in each other's way while playing on the court at the same time. And then you can have, I don't know how Terry Stotts pulls it off. But he's able to run sets where one of them is on the court while the other rests, and they're still draining threes. They're still playing fast. Teams are having trouble keeping up offensively with them. And they've been on a tear for the most part of, you know, since the All-Star break. Let me see what they've been doing since we had the elongated break. They blew out the Warriors, which was the Damian Lillard 50-point game. They had a win over the Utah Jazz. They beat the Brooklyn Nets. Then they lost to Houston, and then they bounced back with a road win in Chicago over the Bulls. Here's where I'm trying to figure out. You know, a lot of people gave Damian Lillard flack for, you know, taking that max money, and then in doing so, a lot of the other Portland Trailblazers teams players were kind of allowed to go ahead and find other teams in free agency. They traded away Nick Batum. A lot of people started saying that it was Lillard that was sort of causing some of the dissension, that he wanted it to be his team and not LaMarcus Aldridge. But now it's starting to look like everything's coming up Lillard.
Yeah, but I'm just going to repeat my statement. Did we expect Houston to be this bad? Do we expect Phoenix to be this bad? Do we expect New Orleans to be this bad?
I didn't expect Houston to be that bad. I don't know about the other ones.
So you thought New Orleans was going to take a nosedive and not?
No,
you
know, I always think New Orleans is going to do well. But that's just the delusional side of me.
So with, you know, if those three teams were better, Portland would be 10th right now, where Sacramento is, and nobody would be talking about them. So I think it's the fact you have a weakened West, and even Dallas took a step back. So you have lesser if this were last year's Western Conference, they'd be far, far down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, you know, you have a lot of teams are doing a lot worse than them. So you're doing better than expected because of what your competition is.
That's true. And then Dallas is in the same spot as Portland, 3 games over .500. They were 3 games over .500 last year, likely wouldn't make the tournament.
Exactly.
Or the playoffs. You know, I got tournament on my brain right now. And then let's talk about Utah. Rudy Gobert's back, and, you know, I'm not saying Gobert's the most important player on that team, or would you go as far as to say that he's the most important player?
No, he's not the most important player. Gordon Hayward is.
Is Gordon Hayward, should he have been an all-star?
No. The way it went, you know, you can argue about Aldridge, you know, over Lillard, or that was really the only argument, and if you're not that argument, you're just good.
Mm-hmm.
So he by far is the team. So,
but Gobert at 10.5 rebounds, 2.5 blocks. You know, obviously a defensive eraser. His presence has been very helpful for the entire front court. The other guy that's been getting a lot of talk lately is the second year player Rodney Hood. So I've heard some people compare him to a future James Harden. He's at 15 points, 3.3 rebounds, 2.8 assists. He's got that little sideways shot, which is why I think a lot of people compare him. His 3-point percentage is up. His field goal percentage is slightly up. Not great shooting percentage yet, but you can. What's the potential there with Rodney Hood?
I don't know what his potential is. It's not Harden. I don't see him being, you know, that.
You like Justice Winslow as sort of the next Harden.
He could be if he figures it out, but, you know, he's a rookie, and obviously the rookies are – these one-and-doners take more than a half a season to get up to speed these days, so.
Yeah, and next James Harden, we don't mean that as, like, an insult, even though a lot of people have sort of sullied his reputation over the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. I mean, James Harden is still an incredible offensive player, so if you get compared to him as a young James Harden, that's a compliment.
Well, yeah, James Harden, the on-court, but as opposed to the – you know, coach killer, team killer, me.
Yes.
You know, I don't see him, you know, maybe I just don't see the superstar in Hood, but he's a nice complimentary piece. But then again, you know, a couple years ago, we wouldn't expect Damari Carroll to be in the league as he was bouncing around and, you know, some of these players to develop. So
does it just show the eye that Utah has for talent?
No, because they've also made a lot of bad choices, too.
We can't call Dante Exum a bad choice yet, because he had a knee injury.
I was referring to Trey Burke. Alex Burks has never been healthy ever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Trey Lyle, Devin Booker, I mean.
You got it right. Booker's in Phoenix. And Lyle's, he played okay, but that was only because Favors was out and then Gobert was out. And then
there's too many Kentucky guys coming in now. There's too many of them. I'm getting them all mixed up, even big ones for small ones. But yeah, Lyle, it's like, oh, well, he's a stretch four, can shoot the three. I'm not really seeing him shoot the three well. I'm not really seeing him do much, and doesn't really seem to be fitting. But no, Hood, he seems to be, you know, he's developing. He's doing better than I expected. But again, like I said about players developing, did you expect CJ McCollum to do anything that he's been doing now? Did you expect him to explode?
McCollum, no. I mean, most improved player, like guarantee type of guy, no. Didn't expect it. Now, we saw McCollum play well in the playoffs when Lillard struggled. You know, he had like a 34-point game, I think, against the Grizzlies, 33 points. So you could see he had potential to be a great scorer, but I didn't see this. I didn't see him becoming a 20-point-per-game guy in the NBA.
Yeah, 20-point, 40-minute guy, so.
I mean, he's just found himself a really, really great role there alongside Damian Lillard. Maybe they have a friendship, or maybe because McCollum looks up to Dame, that they're able to play well together. They don't get in each other's way. You know, we'll see what happens, though, when McCollum has to get paid in a couple of years. But, you know, that's down the road.
Maybe it's just good coaching.
You think Terry Stotts was sort of the offensive guy for Dallas when they won the NBA championship, and you know, and he had some stints, I think, in Atlanta and Milwaukee as the head coach before that, but those were on some pretty bad teams. I want to bring that back, though, because one of the teams that he coached, you know, in Atlanta, Joe Johnson signed there when Atlanta was in the total dregs. Now, we're at the end of the Joe Johnson, Max Deal era, which a lot of people criticized him for when he left Phoenix in 2005, and they had that crazy, weird, like, arbitration where they had to match his max salary in order to sign him. And then he signed a max contract with Atlanta a second time in 2010, and then he was traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Give me the story on Joe Johnson, because if anybody knows, it's you, because he was originally drafted by the Celtics, and they traded him to Phoenix.
Yeah, they got rid of him a half season to get Rodney Rogers and Tony Delk.
He was a first-round pick out of Arkansas. You know, not like a guarantee guy, not a guy that everyone said was going to be amazing. He was sort of like a defensive guy at first. But what's the story on Joe Johnson, basically?
Joe Johnson just played with really good people, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. Think about, you know, his time in Phoenix, who he was with there. Then all of a sudden he goes to Atlanta, and he had, you know, that – I didn't say it was, you know, a great team, but everybody knew their role. Josh Childress was good there till he left and then disappeared. It was just – that was like a system team with Hortford and
– Josh Smith, Jay Smith.
Josh Smith, where, Mark, you know, Williams. As a whole, they all fit, but individually, one by one, Hortford's the only one who really –
Yeah.
Can handle it.
And, like, I mean, Stotts was the, like, I mean, I might even be getting confused about whether or not Stotts was at Atlanta. I know for sure Lon Kruger was there. And then after him, there was and then somewhere in between, there was a coach there, and he got fired. And then Mike Woodson took over, and it was under Woodson that the team started to find itself. And the star player on that team in terms of scoring was Joe Johnson. He was at, you know, 21 points a game in 08, 21 points a game in 09, 21.3 in 2010. Then he signed the contract, and he never got to over 20 points a game again. You know, and then he was traded to Brooklyn, and he was criticized a lot as like an albatross kind of contract when Atlanta had him, and then when Brooklyn had him.
Well, it was until it was an expiring deal, and if the cap didn't explode this year, you know how much valuable he'd be?
Mm-hmm.
People would be lining up at the door to try to trade for him, to try to get Durant next year, and that cap would have been huge for them, but...
Yeah, but the problem is he's slipped off so badly now. You know, he's at 12 points, just under 4 rebounds and just over 4 assists. Now, the 4 rebounds and 4 assists is pretty close to normal for him, but the scoring has always been his trait. His ability to make shots, his ability to, you know, play in the clutch. That I think his clutch factor is really what I remember the most out of Joe Johnson in his best days.
Yeah, he was just, you know, one of those... I don't want to say he's one of those outdated small forwards who just could go ISO and not have, mm-hmm. you know, like the Carmelo Anthony Paul Pierce type player, but...
Well, he was a 6'7" small forward. That's old school.
Yeah.
You know.
And now you're just, you know, a 4 in the new NBA? I don't know.
I don't know where he fits now, but, you know, the truth is, and as much as people hate to admit it, you know, when they're superstar players, the older you get, the further you slide on the position. Like, why do you think LeBron James plays power forward a lot now? All these theories about, well, playing power forward gives you have to take more of a beating every day in physicality-wise in the NBA. That's not true. Do you watch the power forwards in the NBA? They're all sliding around. Look at Draymond Green.
LeBron plays the 4 because he can't shoot the 3 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So as your percentage goes down, I'm like, well, maybe I should, you know, use my size because I'm still faster than the traditional 4. So
yeah, take advantage there.
Yeah, so that's what he wants to do. So and, you know, who are we to say no?
And Anthony Davis is weird. He's a natural 4 who's got all the skills of a 3. You know, that's kind of where his biggest advantage is.
He's unique.
But Joe Johnson, I mean, here's the thing. Like we talked about, he's not unique. He was like a natural fit in his position, and he wasn't like the sexiest player. You know, he got great numbers. You know, his career average was 17 points and 4 rebounds and 4 assists a game. Really, really good. Hall of Fame guy? I don't know. Who cares? But you know,
no.
In terms of his total career, really, I mean, you have to appreciate it.
I made a ton of money.
So you appreciate the money he made.
Oh, he appreciates the money he made. But no, he you know, it's the thing about contracts is, you know, he didn't ask to be paid that much. They just said, you know, what are you going to go? No, no, I want to get paid less. No, I'm going to take a big pay cut. No, you're going to take whatever, every penny you could get. So did he live up to it? No, but who really could live up to it? Garnett didn't live up to his super huge, you know, richest contract of all time. But then again.
Or did he?
Well, he got traded and then, you know, won. So in Minnesota, when he got paid there, did he do anything for them? Well, he made the playoffs a few times, but.
Well, he was the league MVP and he was by far their best player. So I can't, I mean, I hate that. He's almost in the similar position. He was in a similar position to what AD is at in New Orleans, where he is the man. Like, he is the man. And you have to surround him with good players and good teammates in order to get them far in the playoffs. He can't do it on his own.
Yeah, so that's the point of you want that, you know, the contract just kills your entire team because there's nobody else you can pay because you're making a third of the freaking cap.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 12 positions that are, you know, realistically 8 to spread around with 2/3 of the money as opposed to, you know, 4/5. So that's why you can't really live up to such lofty standards because, well, you now somebody you have to get somebody who's damaged goods or somebody who's past their prime because, well, you need to make that extra $10 million.
Okay, let's go ahead and kind of just wrap things up a little bit as we finish up this regular season catch up. I want to talk about a little bit about the schedule here with the games coming up. It doesn't seem like there's much going on, but let me see what we got here coming up with the schedule. Okay, on Monday we've got the Pacers and the Cavaliers. So what do you see there?
Nothing.
You know, how about the Celtics and the Jazz? Since we just talked about the Jazz, you get to see the great Roddy Hood close up in the TD Garden if you went to the game.
The Jazz just lost a pretty bad game the other day, didn't they?
They did, yes. They lost an ugly one.
So the Jazz, yeah, they lost to that Brooklyn.
It was Brooklyn, yeah. And actually, Brooklyn's won 4 out of 7. You know, since they fired the head coach Lionel Hollins a long time ago. But it's just one of those lulls in February where people just take them for granted. And
you fire your coach, you fire your GM, you fire your captain and Joe Johnson. So
one guy that a lot of people are sort of kicking themselves that they didn't make a deal for him is Thaddeus Young because he's playing a lot better in Brooklyn now.
Well, everybody. Well, I think that was just they wanted too much for him.
Mm-hmm.
Or nobody just, I don't know. I think, like I said, we mentioned, you know, last week, it was just too much of, well, nobody else made a deal, so why do we want to mess up our team? Because, you know, we don't want to kill our chemistry we have going.
That's the most interesting Monday game I see. On Tuesday, Chicago goes to Miami to play the Heat. On Wednesday, we've got the Blazers going to Boston to play the Celtics. I actually want to see that game because, to everybody's surprise, you know, a game like the Celtics and the Blazers is actually a high-scoring type of affair. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing that. We got here the Wizards and the Timberwolves. I don't know. I got, you know, the Timberwolves are like a League Pass favorite of mine. Like, if I had League Pass, I would want to watch the Timberwolves more often than I should.
Oh, they're fun to watch the first three quarters. Then there's no point in watching the fourth quarter.
Oh, they lose a ton of games. You're right. Yeah, I mean,
yeah. So in the end, it just gets sort of depressing. But the first three quarters, when nobody's really caring, everybody's just sort of scoring at will and just running plays. That's fun.
The most interesting Wednesday game is actually the nightcap at 9:30 Central, and that's going to be the Thunder at the Clippers. Let's see what the Thunder have left in the tank after that really tough loss against the Golden State Warriors. TNT doubleheader, you've got the Spurs at the Pelicans. Oh my God, the Pelicans are on TV 2 weeks in a row on TNT. And then the Thunder go to Golden State to play the Warriors. They had just played prime time on ABC like, what, a month ago? Right before the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And here they are again on TNT. Friday, March the 4th, you've got here the Pacers at the Hornets. That'll be interesting. The Portland Trailblazers go to Toronto to play the Raptors. The Wizards are trying to kind of right the ship there, but they have to go to Cleveland and play the Cavaliers. And then on Saturday, you've got the Boston at Cleveland. We all know what happens when Boston plays a LeBron coach. Well, I almost said a LeBron coach team, huh?
Pretty much.
Well, the last time they were there, Avery Bradley hit that corner three, so we'll see if, you know, history repeats itself. And then the Rockets play the Bulls on ABC. The Clippers play the Hawks. You know, a couple of interesting games there, but nothing that really, really stands out. But as it gets competitive, I mean, here's the thing. when the Pelicans play the Pistons, you look at it and you're like, eh, whatever. And then Anthony Davis has like the greatest game of all time, and you're like, it becomes this like this sensational game. It's just so rare where a game like the ABC game between the Warriors and the Thunder, where it really does turn into a great memorable performance.
Yeah, you never know what game is going to be the big game.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to kind of measure it once they're actually done. You know, where, I mean, now people who do like Nielsen ratings don't care about that. They just want to know how many people are watching it. But you can almost tell when you follow social media which one is really hitting the mark. You know, that's
thanks to social media, you can tune in a second as opposed to, oh man, I missed it. Oh, the highlights kind of. Oh, but now it's just like, oh, something's going on.
Let's go right to it. Exactly.
Let me record what I'm watching and then flip over.
And then we have the Academy Awards. By the time a lot of people get to this episode, the Academy Awards will probably be passed by. First of all, did you watch any of the Oscar contenders for Best Picture, Best Act, any of the movies involved in the running?
Probably the cartoons.
The cartoons?
Probably the animated ones.
Oh, the animated shorts and the animated, like Inside Out.
Yeah, I saw Inside Out.
Now, if you watched Anomalisa directed by Charlie Kaufman, then I'd be very proud of you.
No, but I wanted to watch it. I
did too. I'm a huge Charlie Kaufman fan. Huge. Now, I did not like. I did not. Now I'm outing my inner nerd, but I did not like Synecdoche, New York. That one really, really disappointed me. That was the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman, where he's like a playwright, and they make an entire play about his life. Do you remember that one?
Nope.
No, but you know Adaptation and Being John Malkovich and Eternal Sunshine. Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine I did not like.
And then, well, they got Spotlight, which is based on, you know, the true story of the Boston Globe there investigating the Catholic Church sex scandal. You know, that's one of the ones that is in the running for Best Picture, even though they're probably not going to win a lot of the acting categories. A lot of people think they're going to win a best one of the screenplay awards, and it's in the running for Best Picture. Did you get to watch that one?
Nope, I have seen maybe 3 movies this year. It's not, but you know, oh man, we got to write a newspaper article. What action there? You know, and oh, The Revenant. He's just cold.
Yeah, hey, well, he gets attacked by a grizzly bear because he's a fur trapper. So
if you've ever been, you know, in the cold of Canada or the Dakotas, yeah, that's just Tuesday.
Well, Leonardo, the big storyline is Leo DiCaprio going to get the Oscar that he's been begging to get for years and years and years? And some people would say he kind of got the shaft on in terms of nominations, like, you know, when he played J. Edgar Hoover, when he was in Titanic, he didn't get nominated, and he didn't actually go. He didn't win for The Aviator. Jamie Foxx did for Ray Charles, you know? So a lot of people feel like this is like the comeuppance for Leo DiCaprio to try to finally get the Oscar that he desperately wanted. You know,
well, that's what it seems like, is that's the reason he did the film. It's just like, okay, this is the one. I need to go do hard things to get it. Because The thing about him, I forget, you know, what podcast said it or whatnot, but they're like, every time you watch a Leonardo DiCaprio film, it's just like, oh, it's Leo playing somebody. It's Leo in this.
Yeah, it's him trying to get in serious. The one thing I will like about Leo DiCaprio winning an Oscar is that he can finally get the monkey on his back, and maybe he can just do some fun movies. You know what I'm saying? I like him in things like Inception and The Great Gatsby. Like, I like him trying to, like, sort of stretch himself, maybe be more of a comedy guy. Maybe he can do, like, a Judd Apatow movie or something.
Oh, just tons of dialogue.
Well, that's just one example. I mean, I could have named 25 comedy directors, and it would have been better. You know, like did you watch Johnny Depp as Donald Trump in that Funny or Die movie?
No, not yet.
They did a movie based on The Art of the Deal that's directed by Donald Trump as himself, and it's Johnny Depp as Donald Trump, and it's got a pretty decent cast of other people around it, but Depp as. And it's sort of, it's a little too long of a sketch for my liking because it's 80 minutes long, or maybe about just over 60 minutes. But Johnny
for
Depp,
Funny or Die? No, they should be 3 to 5 minutes tops for Funny to Die.
No, over an hour. It's over an hour. It's a 60 plus minute Funny or Die sketch, which obviously it kind of dies halfway through where you're like, okay, I get it. you know. But and then the other ones, I'm trying to remember, The Big Short, which they filmed here in New Orleans, directed by Adam McKay, who a lot of people know from like Step Brothers and The Other Guys and Anchorman, and this was his first kind of serious turn, even though it has comedic elements. Big cast: Brad Pitt, Christian Bale, Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling. And a lot of people like that one as the best, like as a potential best picture winner. A lot of people have been talking about that one. It's about the mortgage crisis, I believe.
Yeah.
The economic meltdown of 08.
Well, the thing, you know, also, I can say the good thing now is they're also putting movies for best picture and best everything that people have seen, as opposed to, you know, like 10 years ago where
Revenant did well in the box office. My dad actually went and saw it, which is rare. It's very rare that one of my parents has actually seen the Best Picture contender before I have. Because a lot of times, the Best Picture is like 12 Years a Slave. And
Picture's in 10 theaters, and it made $100,000.
Even Argo. Not a lot of people saw Argo before it won Best Picture.
I saw Argo.
It's a terrific movie. It is.
Yeah, but that also, it did well. It made like 20 or 30 million.
Yeah, it's about 50 million. Yeah, it came out in the month of October.
Days of movies making $2 million and all getting in, it's like, no, we need something that people want to tune into this.
Nobody there's also the Oscar bump, where when it gets promoted heavily, it's in the running and a lot of people are saying it's a sure thing, then it makes good money. Like, Les Miserables was like that. Like, nobody would have watched Les Miserables, but because of the fact that people were saying it was an Oscar contender, it kind of drags people out to go see it. And that's what happened with The Revenant.
What did you think of it?
What's that?
And what did you think of Les Mis?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay.
I hate musicals.
Never would see that.
But like Whiplash didn't make a bazillion dollars, but by the time... Here's the thing. It's one of those things where once you get like 6 months out of the Oscars, once it's actually over, you can actually kind of watch a lot of these movies once they come out on video, once they come out on demand, and then you're like, man, that really was a good movie. So, you know, I can't really say too much about any of them because a lot of them, like Room, Spotlight, the only one I've seen that's in the running is Mad Max Fury Road, which is a fantastic, crazy fucking movie. But and so I hope George Miller, who directed it, because he directed the original Thunderdome movies, hopefully he wins it. But, you know, we'll find out soon. Everybody will probably know by the time we talk about this.
So we can see how well your predictions went.
My predictions here, I'll say, okay, let's talk about Best Picture. I'll say The Big Short, just as an upset.
Okay.
You say
I don't see any upsets happening. I see all favorites. This doesn't seem to be
you see the, you see The Revenant. You see the guy who directed Burn Man, who directed The Revenant, winning too, going hand in hand.
Yeah.
Not George Miller from Mad Max.
No, that's too actiony for the Academy.
The other favorite, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Best Actor. Same for you.
Of course.
Brie Larson for Room.
Sure.
Do you even know what that is?
Nope.
Okay, the favorites there for Best Supporting Actor, the one that everyone wants to win is Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Justin Rosero can't stop talking about Creed. And then the other favorite is Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies.
And then let's give it to Creed. Why not?
Let's give it to Sly, to Rocky. And then in Best Supporting Actress, the top two contenders are Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs and Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl.
Probably they'll give it to Steve Jobs.
Well, they'll give it to Kate Winslet for playing the...
But that's probably, you know, because she has a name, and Danish Girl... I think he already has its buzz.
The Danish Girl's got Eddie Redmayne, who won the Oscar last year for playing Stephen Hawking? And then he played this movie where he wants to be a woman, but he's in the running for Best Actor. But Alicia Vikander plays the friend. And I will say this about her. I saw her in a movie last year called Ex Machina. That movie is fucking awesome. That's a movie I would recommend highly.
That's what I've heard.
It's terrific. That one, and also a horror movie called It Follows. You know, that was actually nominated in the Independent Spirit Awards. The Independent Spirit Awards is weird. It's like, you know how you have the WWE Hall of Fame and then WrestleMania? That's what the Independent Spirit Awards is. It's like they honor all the stuff that you don't remember and, you know, before the big show. And it's funny because when you watch the Independent Spirit Awards, it's like, hey, those are the actual good movies. It's not the heavily promoted studio shit that always wins out because they pay out the voters.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was good.
Yeah, that's on IFC, if, you know, usually on the replay if you ever have to, if you ever get some time. But I think we flushed out our movie portion. I think we're going to get back to this when we talk about the Batman-Superman build-up.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said that. You can't wait to talk about Dawn for Justice.
More superhero movies. Why not?
Well, we have our walking superhero in the NBA in Steph Curry, so we you know, we ain't off the superhero genre yet. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andy Reish. Take care, everybody. Bye.